ask if the support that I'm offering, the behaviors we're engaged in, is it keeping them in a pattern of floundering, or is it helping them make steps towards the future and being able to do well?
Welcome to The Lisa Show, where we take a good look at life. The other night, one of my adult children, and I use the term adult loosely because this is a gradual process, people, came home for dinner. Ahead of time, I'd placed a piece of mail on the table addressed to them for them to come and pick up. And they saw it and they said to me, "I really wish you wouldn't open my mail." And I was confused because the letter wasn't open. "I didn't," I replied. They said, "I'm an adult, and it's actually illegal to open mail addressed to me." And they opened my refrigerator and helped themselves to some of my food that I had purchased. Now, instead of going on a tirade about would it kill them to say something like, "Oh, I don't know, hey, it's nice to see you," I know I'm supposed to get curious when I really want to get mad. In fact, my friend Julie Rose has a podcast called Uncomfy that is all about just that. All the life coaches and therapists and parenting experts say, when you're about to lose it, don't get judgmental, get curious. I wasn't feeling curious. So as they examined their letter, it dawned on me, oh, they've never had to open a tax return letter before. So I explained it to them. Okay, you see, the letter is the envelope. See, you fold along the perforated lines here and here and here, and it opens the letter. They were not amused. They said, okay, but don't open my mail. I said, I think what you meant to say was, thank you, Mom, for saving my mail for me and sending it out. I realized that Willie opened the letter, so I also apologize for jumping to conclusions and not assuming the best of you. Okay, Mom, they said, yeah, all right. I had to put in, also, it's your tax return, so would you like me to help you prepare your taxes for the first time, or do you want to do it yourself? I certainly don't want to overstep. I mean, I know, I just can't resist a little bit of sarcasm. They shove a fistful of goldfish crackers in their mouth, the same snack I thought they'd grow out of but haven't. Actually, yeah, they say to my offer. I'll take my mail and my laundry isn't finished, but I'll come back and get it later. And then they ate more of my food and left. And as I cleaned up the kitchen that night after everyone had gone home, guess what I found still lying on the counter? That dang letter. This interaction, for some reason, is the one that I think about when someone asks me what parenting emerging adults is really like. Now, I'll be honest, folks. I was way more prepared for parenting for the first 18 years of my kids' lives than I have been for parenting emerging adults. I mean, I expected newborn sleepless nights and toddler tantrums and tween mood swings and teen boundary pushing, but that seems to be where my parenting book ended. This new volume of life, the one where my kids are technically grown but are still trying to figure out how to adult, is not one I have in my parenting library. So that's why I decided to have my friend, Dr. Larry Nelson, on the show. Larry is an expert on emerging adults, and he has helped me to understand why parenting emerging adulthood is unique, particularly for this generation, and how we can do it better. Here's our conversation.
My name is Dr. Larry Nelson. I'm faculty in the School of Family Life at Brigham Young University. My research focuses on those factors that either lead to flourishing or floundering in the 20s. I just finished time in the leadership of the Society for the Study of Emerging Adulthood. So this is my identity. This is what I do. I have children in this age period. So it's near dear to my heart in so many ways, talking about the transition to adulthood.
The emerging science of transitioning into adulthood. I mean, that sounds really exciting. I know we have a lot of different questions about it. I receive a lot of emails and social media notes asking me about this stage of life. I thought I knew what it was going to be like. This is totally foreign. I'm having a hard time understanding my kids, their choices. It does seem like there's a bigger shift in generation. I wonder if every generation says that. Is it different?
It is different. And that's why the first thing I would say to listeners and parents everywhere who have kids in this age is forget everything that you experienced. parents say, well, this is how I did it, and it worked for me, therefore. And they try to impose their experience onto their kids. But the truth is, the context for transitioning to adulthood is so different than it's been in the past. Let me explain what I mean by that. The first big change that's occurred is the average age of marriage. The average age of marriage in the United States now is approximately 30 for men and 28 for women. And if we look across all industrialized nations, it's 32 for men and 30 for women. So you now have an entire decade of extended singleness. And that has led to a lack of structure. What do I mean by that? Young children, at any given time, there is an adult taking care of them. Mm-hmm. Even as adolescents, there is an adult responsible for them. A parent, a teacher, a principal, a coach, an employer, something like that. There's somebody accountable for them. Not in the late teens and 20s. There is nobody accountable for them, and very different than in the past, nobody to whom they are accountable. In decades past, you could maybe go right into a career without a secondary education. No longer the case. And so that's another thing. It's taking longer to become financially independent. Education is taking longer. It's just taking more to get the skills needed to become financially independent. So you have almost a decade for some young people in which there's no structure. There's no accountability to somebody in particular. There's complete autonomy, meaning they get to choose what to do, when to do it, who to do it with, for how long to do it, and that's totally up to them. The next big thing that's different is young people today have a very negative view about adulthood. I remember my 5-year-old son was feeling this once. He always wanted to be playing with friends. And one day, one friend left to go home, and he said, "Dad, I'm going to this friend's." I'm like, "You don't always have to be with a friend." And he said, "Yes, I do, because when I grow up, I won't get to play with friends anymore." He was already sensing that adulthood is terrible. And young people have grown up at our dinner tables listening to us adults complain about our jobs and finance, all these things that have just kind of conveyed adulthood is not fun. We've got to change that narrative, by the way, but that's a different discussion. So they just think, "I don't want to be an adult. Instead, I just want to stay in my 20s because the 20s is all about fun." And that's what studies have shown. You ask young people what they think they need to be doing during this time period because they'll never get to again. They talk about the fun, the partying, the playing around. So they've got autonomy to do what they want, no structure, no responsibility towards somebody, a view of adulthood as negative and the 20s as absolute fun. And then the icing on the cake, we now know that the brain doesn't fully develop until age 25. We used to think it was 18. And some parents will push back and say, "Well, that means my brain wasn't fully developed, but I did just fine in my 20s. Again, the context was different. You went right into jobs, into marriage, maybe into the military. There was all this structure. There's so much instability. They will move more during this period of their lives, actual physical residences than any other time. They're saying goodbye to friends from high school, making new friends. Those who are in college, they're changing majors. It's the peak period for substance use, drug and alcohol use, for risky driving behaviors, driving without a seatbelt, over the limit, while texting. It's the peak period for self-harm, video game use, pornography use. 1 in 3 Americans have been arrested by the age of 25, with about 40% of men having been arrested by the age of 23. So that recipe for disaster of focus on the self, extended singleness, complete autonomy, lack of stability, structure, again, underdeveloped brain, makes for a time period that unless we do something to help our young people stay safe through it, it's a time period that sets them up to flounder. And again, it's why I applaud those who are flourishing and doing well despite the time period, because it is really a challenging time period for young people to develop in now.
How would you define those who are flourishing?
This is going to be foundational for how parents should think about how to approach, how they help young people, and that's, are they making progress towards things that are good, milestones we want to see them accomplish, identity development, figuring out who they are in regard to work, what do they want to do, relationships, what type of person would be a good fit for them to make committed relationships with in the future, their belief system, their value system. So these aspects of their identity, you want to see them making progress. Let me stop and give an example. If a young person may not have picked a major yet, if they're in school, but if they're actively attending major fairs, taking a variety of classes, they're striving towards that goal. And that's great. The expectation isn't that they have a major within the first 2 months of education, but are they making steps towards it? Young people who are flourishing, we see engage in less risky behaviors, whether that's driving, risky sexual behaviors, engaging in substance use. Young people who are doing well are engaged in activities that focus on other people. We just completed a study that looked at how individuals in their early 30s are doing, kind of looking at how the choices they made in their 20s are affecting them as they begin their 30s. And those who were doing well had achieved an education in some area, that can be whatever, but they had also spent time in their 20s volunteering. Isn't that something
that
in this period of life that is solely focused on them? I get to do what I want, when I want to, with whom I want to, and I get to have fun. But those who are doing well take some time to think about others. And I think it just helps them maintain this perspective of, yes, I'm going to enjoy this period that I am in, but I'm going to think about the future at the same time and about a world beyond myself. The analogy that I give is if you're trying to get to California, there are two things that'll keep me right now from getting my car and not ending up in California. One is if I take the wrong road. Right? If I engage in a path that's not going to get me to where I want, and I liken that into some of these risky behaviors. Imagine leaving your 20s with bad credit, addictions, with arrest records, all of these things. I'm not going to get where I want to go. And the other way that I don't end up in this metaphor of trying to get to Los Angeles is if I never start my car and start driving. Right? Things that maybe aren't dangerous, they aren't risky, but if I'm spending all of my time focused just on fun, on video games or social media or just with friends all the time, I'm not saying those things are bad in moderation, but if they're keeping me from getting up and getting going on making some progress 2, 4, 6, 8 years from now, I'm still in my car in the parking lot.
Right.
Listen, enjoy the time period. It is fabulous. If for us to tell young people that they shouldn't have fun, we'd lose all credibility.
Right.
It is a fun time period. But you've got to do some things now with an eye towards the future. And those who are flourishing seem to have that balance.
I appreciate you laying that out because it seems clear. And if we have a clear vision, we can communicate it better.
Yeah.
But I'm sure that there are things that we can do better, myself included. I mean, let's start with that. First of all, what is our role as parents with helping emerging adults?
Yeah. I really hope the parents of children and teenagers are listening because that's when it starts. We have got to foster a relationship with them. I'm going to draw on my Christian background, the famous parable of a sower who is distributing seeds. The seeds are all good. Whether the seeds take root and grow had nothing to do with the seeds. It had to do with the ground. If I'm trying to plant a seed in rocky ground, it's not going to take root. I need parents to see the most important thing that they're trying to do is facilitate a relationship with their kids. And some will instantly push back. I'm not saying you're trying to establish a best friendship, but you're establishing a strong parent-child relationship of mutual respect and love. So many parents are, it's your job to respect me. And when our kids ask, well, why? instead of giving them the information that would help them understand why we simply revert to the things that we hated as kids, but now we say it all the time as parents, because I said so, because I'm your father, because as long as you live under my roof, you'll obey my rules. Well, guess what? In the moment they turn 18.
See ya.
And anything that we now have to convey to them is like trying to plant seeds on rocky ground. It begins with forming a relationship with our kids so that in this time period, they still want our advice. They still want some assistance and help. That when things get rough, they know who they can turn to. And so it begins with a relationship with them. When you ask 18 to 25-year-olds, do you consider yourself an adult? Over 70% will say no. Some ways, yes, but in other ways, no. And so a follow-up question that we've asked in research is, what do you feel you need to accomplish before you will consider yourself fully an adult? And in almost every study that I've conducted and colleagues around the world, the number one answer is, I need to be able to accept responsibility for the consequences of my actions. Well, that's exactly what we're hoping to facilitate. Yeah. They know that to be an adult, they need to become less self-focused and have greater concern about others, be able to care for other people in a variety of contexts. Third, they always say they need to be financially independent, but always up there, somewhere in that top five, young people will say, I want to develop a more equal relationship with my parents. We have to shift our thinking. We need to move from the role of manager to understand that we're now consultants.
Ooh, yeah. Ooh, when you said that, I went, ugh. Yeah, because I still want to be the manager.
Yeah.
Yeah, I want to be reported to directly.
You want to be reported to directly.
I
want to be the one giving the to-do list for the day.
Yes, okay, we've talked about your goals. This is great. So now I want you to do this.
Yes.
I think this makes the most sense, yeah.
And again, consultants are those who, if we stick with business, they seek that outsider's specialty and wisdom and insight. They're only going to turn to those they trust in business. Likewise, kids are only going to turn to those they trust. So we need to build that relationship, shift our mindset to becoming consultants rather than managers, and so that they can come to us and then we can share with them. So it's not that they're trying to cut apron strings. They want to renegotiate the relationship.
It does feel like biting your tongue or holding back or doing things that you have an inclination to do. So I do think that it's a big transition for parents, even if they have a great relationship with their kids. I think it's so awkward. It feels wrong, even when you want to do the right thing.
It's exactly right. Because again, we love them. And no stage in life will the consequences, good or bad, have longer lasting important ramifications.
Yes, thank you for saying that.
So it's the weight of that. I think of the analogy that when we were young kids and first taught about butterflies, and we were told that if you take that butterfly as it's hatching from the cocoon, you can't force its wings open, they'll never learn to fly. You can't hold it too tight, it'll never learn to fly. And as our kids are going through this stage of life, as parents, we have two big fears. One is that they won't fly. But for many of us, the other is that they will.
No.
Right? But even just conveying that, we're in this together. This is new territory. Just want what's best for you. Let's figure out how to do this together. Many emerging adults are floundering because they're scared to death of making wrong choices.
I have noticed that.
Mm-hmm.
They're scared of making a mistake.
Yeah.
And so if we find ourselves with an emerging adult that's just paralyzed by this, what is our role as their consultant to help them?
Usually allowing them to say, I don't know what to do, Mom. What should I do? Boom. There you go.
Okay. There is that pressure to say they're asking me my opinion. It's got to go. I got to say something profound.
And even in that moment, it's, I want to get this right because of how much I love you. Can you give me a day and will you still allow me tomorrow to say it? In fact, how about we do lunch, my treat, tomorrow? And I will have thought about that some more. Anything that would convey through our words and our actions that we truly are on your side, have your best interest at heart. And I'm here to support you rather than direct.
Yeah. And I'm going to give it the weight that you're asking.
Yeah. But if they're like, I'm so frustrated. Well, one thing you could do. No, I don't. This just happened to me this morning.
My daughter came to me with frustration. And I said, well, here's another way you could think about it. It was not received well.
They're venting. They want somebody to listen to them. They may even just need to get all their thoughts out. And that process of getting it out to somebody gives them clarity.
It's really hard for me to keep my mouth shut.
It is for all of us. We're all going to make mistakes. But kind of testing it to see could be, well, if you'd ever like me to maybe give some things to consider that maybe you haven't thought of, I'm always here. Or do you want some thoughts? Or do you just want me to listen? Just asking for clarity. And oftentimes that right there will just be, thanks.
Yeah.
Thanks. You know what? I just need somebody to listen to me right now. But I'll come and talk to you if I do want it. And you walk out with a win.
If you could change anything about parents or parenting of emerging adults, what is the biggest change that you would like to see?
We really need to eliminate all forms of control. The thing that probably comes to so many people's minds is helicopter parenting. This type of parenting that by definition is stepping in and doing for your child what they are capable of doing for themselves. We think then that we need to go the exact opposite and just leave them totally on their own. I think about back when our adorable kids were about 4 years of age and we were helping them to learn how to ride a bike. We didn't say, hey, good luck with that whole bike thing now that you're four. We went out with them. We didn't climb on the bike with them. We put a hand on the back of the bike, helped stabilize the bike, and then we let go. But we provide that support, that structure, that stabilizing hand. So how do we do that with not stepping in and becoming helicopter parents? The type of control that we see more than any other in parenting of emerging adults is what's called psychological control.
Mm.
It may sound like this. Well, if you really loved me, you would do X, Y, or Z. Or after all I've done for you, this is how you repay me, or this is how you show me that you care. Oh, you want my help? Yeah, I'll help you a little bit financially if you break up with that person you're dating, or if you major in what I tell you to. It's this type of control that is more guilt-inducing, manipulative in that sense than just stepping in and doing it for them. And the research shows far more parents use that than helicopter parenting, and the outcomes are far worse.
So because, it's not even effective.
No, it's not effective at all, because back to the analogy of having that relationship, it drives kids away from their parents. It's just this vicious cycle of parent and child against each other. I yell and scream and try to control more, and I pull away more, which is leaving me on my own, so I'm making bad choices, and it's a vicious cycle. Instead, it's building that healthy relationship, then acting as a consultant, providing stabilizing and supportive hand, and all of that should be guided by is what I am doing as a parent fostering flourishing or facilitating floundering. Let me give a concrete example. I'm often asked, is it bad that my emerging adult is still living at home, or that they go to school but then return home? And that's not the right question, because are there times when living at home can be helping them flourish? And are there other times letting them live at home is facilitating floundering? For example, let's say a child is looking forward to applying for graduate school, and they need to build up their resume, their application. So there's an opportunity to do an unpaid internship. They need this experience, but they can't do this unpaid internship, take classes, and work. Hey, mom and dad, can I come home and live while I do this unpaid internship? They're making progress. They're doing something with an eye towards the future. Absolutely, now you're helping to foster their flourishing. But if you have the stereotype of the child in the basement playing video games all night, sleeping all day, and you're just allowing that to happen, now that's facilitating floundering. The same behavior, letting my child live at home, could be good or be bad.
Yeah, and so, all things aren't equal.
They're not equal. And so parents, who are listening, whatever situation you and your child is in, you just ask if the support that I'm offering, the behaviors we're engaged in, is it keeping them in a pattern of floundering? Or is it helping them make steps towards the future and being able to do well? And let that guide you.
I mean, sometimes it's this idea of, I hope it's helping.
Yeah.
I hope that this is helping and that I'm not enabling. But sometimes you don't know until there's been an appropriate amount of time.
And so be patient. If we just harken back to what many might think was an easier time when those kids were little, some of our kids walked earlier than others. Some said their first words earlier than others. Toilet training was a breeze for some and more challenging for others. But they learned how to speak. They learned how to walk. But there's a different timeline for each of our kids. Are they flourishing or floundering? Are you facilitating that or not? And sometimes you don't know the answer until a little bit of time has passed.
I'm sitting here talking to you and thinking about my kids and thinking, oh yeah, I need to tell them this. I need to tell them that. That doesn't always go as planned. What have you found as a researcher about how to deliver the message?
Be very open and vulnerable. That includes saying, let's work on this together. This is my first time.
Or, right,
you're different than your sibling was, but I'm on your side. How can I support you through this? And the more that we can find ways to convey that, for anybody who's listening is going, well, so I'm never allowed to say anything. No, remember, by not saying something, are you facilitating floundering? But in the moment when they're emotional,
right,
that's just not the time. Sometimes we need to apologize and admit to our mistakes and be very open about it. You know what? I didn't do as well as I could have in the past. Will you give me a chance? I'm going to try better. Have you noticed lately? I really am trying. And when we do that, it actually facilitates the relationship. So now they'll trust us a little more. So now we can say it without the raised voice, without the guilt inducing, because they see that change.
I mean, sometimes I let my fear and anxiety bleed into our relationship. I think a lot of times that is misconstrued as a lack of trust and mutual respect, which is not my intent, but I think we do that a lot more often. And so taking a deep breath and getting that perspective before we open our mouths and say the things, and not being afraid to apologize when we do offer advice like I did this morning.
I have a friend told me once when her kids were younger, but she went in and apologized, said how I treated you was wrong. So time out for mom, got the chair facing the wall, timer and everything. The sheer act of being able to do that and let our kids know, I made a mistake. I love you. Please forgive me. Will facilitate the very relationship that we're cultivating. Over the summer, my emerging adult son and I, we were butting some heads, and I just had to step back for a few months. I just want to be with him. And for him, that's us being in the outdoors, engaged in things that we both love. And the thing is, I know when we're in that setting, he does open up, and we can just talk. So you know what? We may have to say some things. It's when we say it. It's how we say it, with the whole goal being that just as we wanted them to ride that bike when they were four, we're helping stabilize the back of the bike, giving them all of our words of encouragement.
One thing that I have learned is that it's okay for me to have my feelings, my expectations, my hopes and dreams for my children. This is something that, you know, these are good things that I want for my kids. But to process that with my friends, with someone else, if and when my kids want something different.
Yeah.
Because that's really none of my kids' business, and I don't need to put that or take that to them, my expectations and things, you know, so that I can show up fully and present for my kids and be a help to them and not have them have to deal with mom's stuff.
Yeah, I love that.
But I think for a while I felt guilty for even having those kinds of expectations and hopes and dreams that they didn't want, but I have learned you don't give them to your kids. That's not their burden to carry. That's your thing that you have to work through.
And maybe changing what we think about as far as our expectations from specifics to the broader things we want.
Absolutely.
We want them to be able to provide for themselves and family, right? But that's different than saying—
And live a joyful life.
Live a joyful life. that can be accomplished so many ways.
Absolutely.
Just because for me, it was a path of education, so many years at a university. Maybe for them, it's this route, but they can still get to that of being able to care for themselves, provide for others, and live a joyful life. We get very caught up in thinking there's only one way.
Right.
And we spend so much time. I mean, I've made mistakes with this. I'm a professor. Education.
This is making me feel better about my parenting, so thank you.
Near and dear to my heart. And so somehow that I've conveyed that that's the only way to happiness or financial independence and being able to care for others and understanding you can get there any number of ways. And it's actually a joy and delight watching them in their own ways make strides. And we just need to remember the relationship's going to change, but it actually, in so many ways, just gets better.
You really did give us some doable items and also just a renewed energy and perspective that I think we're desperately looking for.
Just remember, moms and dads, you've got this. In the end, the choices our kids make don't determine whether we were good parents or not. They have their autonomy to make choices, and the determination of whether we're good parents is our efforts to support and love and foster their flourishing to the best of our abilities. And it's not based on the outcomes that they use the autonomy. So you've got this, moms and dads out there, you've got this.
When I sat down with Larry, I had my pen and notebook ready for a list of milestones and rules. Don't pay for this. Do help out with this. Cut this off when they reach this age, etc. Instead, I think Larry gave me a much more valuable perspective with this question: is it facilitating floundering or fostering flourishing? Situations and personalities and timelines differ. So when Larry suggested we forget the rule book and use this rubric instead, that resonated with me. The way I do things may not look the same as the way you do things. But with this question in mind, we can all be confident that we're doing our best for our emerging adults. Larry gave us some other ideas on how to assist our emerging adults. We can't compare their experience to our own because it's a different game now than the one we played. Seeds grow in good soil. So if we want to be able to guide our kids into adulthood, we have to have a relationship with them that's based on respect. And that starts at any age. We should switch roles from being our kids' managers to our kids' consultants. We need to support our young adults, not control them. We should apologize when necessary and constantly affirm that we are on their team. We can broaden the picture when we think about our expectations for our emerging adults, remembering that many different paths can get them to the same destination. Finally, we all need to remember that we are not our children's decisions, but we are their fiercest fans, even when they accuse you of opening their mail. It's not an easy or a comfortable leap from adolescence to the adulting world for parents or young adults alike, but our kids can and will make that jump as we love and support them into flourishing futures.
The Lisa Show is a production of BYU Radio, hosted by Lisa Valentine Clark. This episode was produced by Erica Price with help from Becca Hurley, Blake Morse, and Kenny Mears, with post-production by Gracie Davis. A special thanks to our guest today, Dr. Larry Nelson. Links to his work and our newsletter will be in the show notes. Also, be sure to check out the new and improved Council of Moms wherever you listen. As always, thanks for your messages. We read them all, and thanks for listening.
I want to recommend another BYU Radio podcast you're going to love. It's called Uncomfy, Sticking with Moments That Challenge Us. It's brand new, and it has video as well as audio. So if you're someone who wants to engage with others on important topics but aren't sure how, or maybe you're burned out on social media and wish you could bring some humanity back into the discussions online or in real life, then Uncomfy is just for you. You'll hear stories of real people in challenging moments who chose to stick with the discomfort. And in the process, they healed their communities or learned to talk about what really matters to them or simply started to view others with more empathy. Isn't that what we all need? You can do it too. New episodes of Uncomfy, Sticking with Moments That Challenge Us, drop every Wednesday. And you can listen or watch on the BYU Radio app or wherever you get your podcasts.